Hello. John sort of alluded to it earlier, didn't he, that this was a difficult passage. And I think it's like a controversial passage because you look at it, it seems on the face of it to condone slavery. And we would expect that, a godly man like Peter would be calling out slavery, condemning slave masters, slave dealers, and offering help and support and encouragement to the slaves themselves. But it doesn't. Instead, it says that they should endure their mistreatment because it's commendable to God, which isn't much of a comfort if you are a slave. And it kind of, begs the question, why wasn't God doing more to free slaves rather than simply expect them to put up with their lot? But as I'll say, I'll look at later, I don't think it does condone slavery, and I'll explain why later. I want to start by sharing a bit of testimony. Now, fortunately, I'm not a slave. I've never been a slave. I sincerely hope that no one here has ever experienced having to be a slave. We live in a society where slavery is outlawed. That doesn't mean it doesn't go on in other, unfortunately, it goes on in other countries, or that it doesn't happen surreptitiously in our own country. But thankfully, I think most of us can say we've never experienced slavery. However, we do have employment and we have jobs, and in our jobs we have supervisors and bosses, and therefore what is written in this passage does have some application to us. You shouldn't just think, well, I'm not a slave, so I guess this I can just breeze past this passage. We'll have experienced worker-boss relationships at some point in our lives. So I just want to share my experience or testimony of a difficult worker-boss relationship. So, at a relationship, I've been blessed in many ways to have a lot of good worker-boss relationships, a lot of good bosses in my time. But there was one, and this is going back a few years ago, that was very difficult. And I was in a position with this boss where he was seemingly always unhappy with me. I was either showing too much initiative, which he didn't like because I sort of undermined his authority, or I was not showing sufficient initiative, which he didn't like because he gave me this appraisal and said, "Well, you need to step up, you need to be doing more." And I was thinking, "Yeah, but when I do that, you're telling me off because I'm undermining your authority." So I was kind of between a rock and a hard place, and I just couldn't please the guy. And I wasn't sure, the relationship sort of steadily deteriorated. I wasn't really sure how to respond. And looking at this passage, I sort of had to take on board that, he was still my boss. He might not have been my idea of a good boss, but I still had to respect his authority. I had to figure out how to respond, not just as a disgruntled employee, but also as a Christian. And it felt almost like there were two struggles going on. One was between this relationship between me and my boss, and the other struggle was between me and God, because there was like how I wanted to deal with the situation and how God wanted to deal with the situation. And one particular Friday, I just remember this particular Friday, it was a difficult day, and you couldn't do anything right. You just had the feeling, I can't do anything right. I came home and I was like, I can't be doing with this. Seriously, can't be doing with this. So this is a rather shameful admission on my part, things were so bad, I decided I had to pray. It's like a bit of a bad, things have got to such a bad point, I decided I had to pray, which was a rather shameful admission on my part. But once you've sort of accepted, I'm sure I would have prayed about it in the past, but once you've accepted that you need to pray about something, you need to then figure out, well, what do I pray? Can't pray that anything bad happens to him, really. That would be unchristian. But obviously, I've got this situation. So I prayed was, and it's quite in many ways it's quite a difficult prayer, and that is like, "Your will be done." So God, you know the situation. You know what I'm going through. You know what I'm putting up with. Your will be done. You're in charge. Well, you are. That's like stating the obvious. But yeah, you're in charge. Leave it in your hands. So sometime after, my boss's boss came to see me. He said, "We're starting a new project. We've got a new project coming up. I don't know if you're interested in being involved. I thought, okay, it will mean you're moving to a different section. I thought, different section equals different boss. So I thought, how good is this? You know, like this is like a, it's like an answer to prayer. Yeah, sure. I'll move to this different project, different section. Great. Answer to prayer. So I moved over to this other section. And then I noticed I didn't see my old boss around so much. And I said to someone, I didn't see him around. I don't know what's happening. He said, well, yeah, he's off long-term sick. He's been signed off long-term sick. He's got anxiety and depression. Like I said, I didn't wish ill on anyone. I didn't pray against, you know. I thought, all right. So I thought, this is all good. I mean, I'm working in a different section. I'm not going to come across this guy because he's out of the picture. He's ill. Well, this is good. But then, you know, as I sort of continued to pray, I felt God was challenging me, and God was saying to me, I want you to pray for your boss. Okay, I want you to pray for your boss. I thought, okay, yeah, I'll pray. You know, I hope he's all right and all that. And so I felt challenged. I want you to pray that he gets better and he can return to work. Okay, you know, so you pray that he gets better and we can return to work. While this was happening, I came to the realization that my work in this different section was going to come to an end. I thought it was long term, it was short term, and that I would move back to my original section. At the same time, I'm praying for my boss to get well and come back. And I'm thinking, you know, I know, God, that you created the world, the universe, and everything, and you're all knowing and whatever. But do you see what's happening here? You know, I'm going to be back to square one, you know. So, but I felt God challenge me again and say, well, didn't you pray my will be done? You know, so this is my will, okay? So, pray the boss would get better and return to work. And sure enough, he did. His health improved and he was well enough to come back to work. And I'm not saying we were ever best mates or anything. We were never besties, but our relationship was very different. He was a lot kinder, a lot better. One time, there was a situation where I'd sent an email off, and he wasn't very happy about it. And I thought, here we go. And called me over, and I explained what had happened. I said, well, I sent this email off and everything. And he said, you shouldn't have done that. And I thought, here we go. And he stopped. He said, well, I don't want us to fall out about it. I thought, wow, you know, you've changed your tune. Yeah, so we were never best mates, but it was a better relationship. And I took several things away from this situation. One was that I shouldn't wait until a situation is totally, things are falling apart before you pray. That's not, you know, I mean, prayer should be an ongoing part of your life. It's not there as a, you know, break glass in case of emergency type thing, which I sort of used it. Two was that, like I said, in this section, it mentions about obeying your masters, even the ones who are harsh. I had to respect, like I said, that my boss was my boss. He might not have been my idea of a good boss, but he was still my boss and he still had authority over me. I had to respect that. The other thing I took was, when I was going for this problem, as you do, you share it with other people. So I shared it with a house group, and somebody gave me this book, said, I want to try reading this book. And it was called When People Are Big and God Is Small. I don't know if anyone's ever heard of it. It's not a book I'd heard of before, but he said, this is a book, When People Are Big and God Is Small. It's by someone called Edward T. Welch. And before I even read it, just the title itself really spoke to me about what had gone wrong in my life, because what had happened was that my boss was huge, the situation was enormous, and in comparison, God was very, very small. God had shrunk. So there's something I needed to do. Not so that I said, but I had to get my priorities right. I had to acknowledge God's greatness, His greatness over everything, over me, my problems, my boss, my situation. That's the knowledge that God is big. And that might be stating the obvious, but sometimes it needs to be said and needs to be acknowledged in our hearts and minds. God is big. He is way, way bigger than our problems. So this takes me back to this reading. and why I don't think Peter condones slavery. God is the God over everything. Ultimately, you serve God, whether you are slave or free, master, king, president, whatever, everybody serves God. God is bigger than all, and he's bigger than our circumstances. If you're a slave, ultimately you serve God. So in this passage, it reminds us that God is there as a master first and foremost. You know, as it says, as I prayed, and as it says in the Lord's Prayer, we pray at CCP every week, you know, your will be done. That's a prayer of supplication. It's the one that I found difficult when I was praying for my boss to get better. Your will be done. Now, if you're a slave at the time when this letter's written, you're going to be disappointed, or you might be disappointed. You might want to read that you should be overthrowing your masters, especially the hard ones, the mean ones. But that wasn't God's will. It isn't God's will. Because the thing is, we live in a fallen world. We live in a world where the wheat, and as the Bible says, the wheat and the tares grow side by side. We live in a world of injustice. We live in a world of slavery. How we respond to it is not to take matters into our own hands, but to serve God. God is bigger than our problems. God is bigger than our circumstances. Not to say that we turn a blind eye to injustice. You know, some of the people who campaign against slavery in this country were Christians, people like William Wilberforce. They didn't just turn a blind eye to injustice, but God calls us to follow him whatever our circumstances. Now, this passage isn't the only place in the Bible or even the Old Testament where it mentions slavery. Paul speaks about slavery in his letter to the Romans. It's not talking about slavery as we see it in Peter's letter. Instead, he talks about people who are slaves to sin. And in doing so, he refers to everybody. So this is the passage that's in Romans. What then? Shall we sin because we're not under the law but under grace? By no means. Don't you know that when you offer yourselves to someone as obedient slaves, you are slaves of the one you obey. Whether you're a slave to sin, which leads to death, or obedience, which leads to righteousness. But thanks be to God. Though you used to be slaves to sin, you have come to obey from your heart the pattern of teaching that has now claimed your allegiance. You have been set free from sin and have become slaves to righteousness. So if we take on board what Paul's saying here, we're all slaves. You're either a slave to sin or you're a slave to righteousness. We're all slaves. It's just a matter of what you are a slave to. Are you a slave to your own desires to sin? Are you a slave to God, to righteousness? Yesterday morning, myself and Daniel, we went to the Breakfast for Blokes, didn't we, Daniel?
Yeah.
At Bolton. At Alan Saunders' new church at Bolton. And Daniel, you were in the FIFA competition, didn't you? You did. I thought that was going to be your news, actually. But no, Daniel fought off competition and he won the FIFA competition. Well done, Daniel. At this meeting, they showed a video as a testimony of a guy who had been a gambling addict. And this addiction had just totally ruined his life. He'd had a good job, a big house, everything anyone ever wished for, you know, loving wife, married with two children, the last person you're going to regard as a slave. However, he had a gambling addiction and he was a slave to his addiction. He lost his job, his money, his marriage, his home. He was almost suicidal. And at the point he was going to be made homeless, he had literally black bin liner contained all the stuff he had left in the world. You know, he got down on his knees and he just begged God for help. You know, fortunately he had parents and he had family, he had a sister who supported him and helped him to get back on life. He sorted some of his debt out. He went to Gamblers Anonymous and slowly he began to get his life back together. That's an extreme example, isn't it? That's an extreme example. Fortunately, not many people face those sort of circumstances. But as we, at this meeting, we sort of separated, there was 80 of us, we separated into smaller groups and spoke about some of these issues. You know, we began to talk about how easy it is to become a slave to something, how anything can become an obsession. So one guy shared that he'd become obsessed with bodybuilding and working out and all that sort of thing, and how that took over his life. Someone else, their work, their job, that totally dominated their life. There was no time for anything else. Someone else was so obsessed into Thai boxing that when he got injured, he could realize how much this had taken over his life. You know, we can be slaves to anything. We can be slaves to technology. The other day on the way to work, I realized I forgot my phone. It's amazing. It's sort of a wave of panic sort of passes over me. Oh, no, I haven't got my phone. So we can be slaves. It doesn't have to be drugs. I mean, we were talking about this with these blokes. It doesn't have to be drugs. It doesn't have to be gambling. It doesn't have to be drink. Anything can, in a sense, become an obsession. We can be a slave to anything. The good news is God has desire to set us free from all these things. And Jesus in John's Gospel says this. So the passage in John 8 says, to the Jews who believed him, Jesus said, if you hold to my teaching, you are really my disciples. Then you will know the truth, and the truth will set you free. They answered him, we're Abraham's descendants. We've never been slaves to anyone. How can you say that we will be set free? Jesus replied, very truly I tell you, everyone who sins is a slave to sin. Now, no slave has a permanent place in the family, but a son belongs to it forever. So if the Son has set you free, you will be free indeed. Now, when I was thinking about what to preach on this passage and looking at slavery, that line just came into my head. It's such a wonderful line that we just need to meditate and get our heads around. If the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. The problem comes is that we're like the Jews, we're in denial. You know, we're not slaves. We live in a free country. We've got free speech. We've got democracy. We're not slaves. How dare you call us slaves? We're free. But as Paul says in Romans, ultimately everyone is a slave. You're either a slave to sin or you are a slave to righteousness. You can be free and be a slave. You can be a slave and be free. What God desires is to give us true freedom. Freedom that goes beyond our problems, a freedom that goes beyond our circumstances. And it says again, the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. And that's what it means. Whatever your circumstances, whoever you are, you can experience that freedom. Amen.